everyone in the tech field wants to do three things: relax, automate, and get paid. There's no other tool out there that can make that more possible than D7. Go over to foolishit.com. Don't forget to use the promo code PodNutsShow20 to save an extra 20%. PodNuts would like to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Hey everybody, this is Martin. On today's show, we have Jonathan Nadeau joining us. He's going to talk about his company, the Accessible Computing Foundation. He's going to talk about open source and what that actually means and how he's involved in that in implementing his Sonar project. Unfortunately, due to some audio issues, we had to fall back to our backup copy. We hope you guys enjoy the show, and we're going to see you next week.
Hey everybody, welcome to Geeksters episode 87. Tonight, we have special guests tonight. We have Admiral, as if you listen to Linux for the Rest of Us, Admiral Jonathan Nadeau. I need to ask him really quick before I move on to our other hosts. Jonathan, is it Nadeau or Nadeau?
I think technically it's Nadeau, but I to me it sounds pretentious. So I don't like that. So I always say it's Nadeau.
Oh, it's Nadeau? I've been pronouncing it wrong the whole time.
Well, no, technically you've been saying it right, but I just don't like it. I don't like the sound of it that way. So I always just say Nadeau.
Okay, so Jonathan, Nadeau.
Yeah, there you go.
You got East meets West.
Yeah, right?
Okay, so we have Jonathan, last name, you can choose how you want to say it, tomato, tomato.
There you go.
Joining us, but we're going to get back to you just a minute, because you got some great stuff, and we brought you on, and you actually contacted us because of our last episode regarding open source software and kind of the talk about that, and you wanted to bring some of your information, and I'm excited to talk to you about Sonar and everything you're doing, the Accessible Computing Foundation, and you're just... you're doing so much stuff, and I want to get back to you. But
sure.
I want to introduce everybody. Knows Mitch. Mitch is joining us tonight. Hey, Mitch, how's it going?
Very good. How is everybody else?
Doing well. We're going to call him Mitch the Arch Hammond.
There you go.
All right.
He's going to be
Hammond. Hammond.
There
he goes with last names again.
There I am. I don't even know my wife's last name. All right, Tim. Not. Anyways. Hey Tim, how's it going?
Not even gonna try my last name. I'm doing just fine, Mr. O'Bandy. How you doing, baby?
That's O'Band-Aid to you.
O'Band-Aid.
Or people go, you know, that sounds a lot like Obama, don't you? Said, yes, I do. But it's not Obama.
I thought it was Rambo O'Bando.
It could be Rambo. It could be Tater, depending on where you met me, how you know me, how you know me. Yeah, well,
that was created in OLF.
Well, we'll talk about that one. I was sitting down at OLF and apparently couldn't hear everybody because I was actually working. Couldn't hear everybody say, Martin, come get up for the picture. And Ellis Owen started calling me Tater after that.
I don't know where he got it from.
But I have no idea. But so if you talk to Cody, I'm Rambo. If you talk to Ellis Owens, I'm Tater. You know, whatever.
You know,
maybe I'm a potato with a bandana on.
There you go.
Tater is kind of like... one of those like only nicknames left kind of thing, like when everybody has a nickname for the one guy, he just gets Tater because that's the only thing. You know, cause nobody wants to be Tater, so everyone's, you know, it's just like a Tater.
I drew the short straw.
pretty much. You're the one that gets to cut the red wire or the green wire.
Oh, is it blue and red?
Is it? I don't know.
There's never a green one.
Are you colorblind? Because it doesn't matter then.
Well, if you cut the wrong one, it really doesn't matter.
Well, you'll never know.
I know.
I'll just cut it.
That's right. We'll have Jonathan cut it. All right.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, it was nice knowing you, Tater.
If anybody wants to know, they can go to geeksters.tv, listen to episode 11 of Unbootables.
Yeah. You know, there was a problem on that show with a guy that couldn't pronounce names either.
Did they get rid of him?
No. Well, Podnuts did. That's why he's over there now. But yeah, that was actually pretty classic moments over there when he just couldn't.
I've been getting a lot of good emails about that, putting that back up.
The only name he could say correctly was his own, and he admitted it. So anyway, we'll move. We should move off of that. We got a great show over here, man. I was excited to. I was actually excited to come to this one. I might even listen to it.
Yeah, there you go.
Sweet. You're gonna download it and listen to it. Excellent. Well, like I said earlier, we were introducing Jonathan, last name to be decided later, who is the founder of the Accessible Computing Foundation, the ACF.co. He works on Sonar, which is a distribution for accessibility. And he puts on, you do a lot of stuff. So I'm going to stop talking. And Jonathan, I'm just going to give it over to you. You brought up open source, brought back to us about what you wanted to talk to us about it. So I'd like to know, you know, you're not a horse, but from the horse's mouth, for a lack of terms, you know, who are you?
All right. Well, you guys have said, I'm Jonathan Nado, and I'm the executive director of the Accessible Computing Foundation. It's a nonprofit organization that focuses on developing free assistive technology for people with all types of disabilities. There's a billion people in the world that have some type of disability, and a lot of these, you know, the majority of these people have been written off and you know, pushed off into a corner and forgotten about, and every now and then are thrown a bone, and I want to make a difference with these people. I myself am a blind computer user, blind technologist. I've been blind since the age of 14, so I could see, you know, up until the age of 14, I lost my sight in a car accident. And so I know firsthand how important this is, and to have accessible technologies that I can use and other people can use, because if it wasn't for it, I would have never graduated high school, I would have never graduated from college, I wouldn't be able to do 90% of the things I do with my computer to this day. So I understand first and foremost how important this is. I also am the coordinator of the Northeast Linux Fest. You can visit that site at northeastlinuxfest.org. I think we'll be putting on our fifth one in March 2014 or April of 2014. It's looking like it'll be either at Harvard or MIT this year. Last year was at Harvard. So I've been doing that for quite some time. I did some podcasts a few years ago. I picked that back up, and I've been doing some recently. If you go to frostbitemedia.org, you can see the podcasts I'm doing there. Some of them are dead, but they're still there. So if you want to listen to them, like I did one called Joy Nation, which is now Mobile Dynasty. I started that podcast up with Ellis Owens and the whole Mobile Dynasty crew. I also do one called Sonar Radio, where we talk about, it's me and two other blind guys, and we're talking about assistive technology and free software and GNU Linux distributions and how to use it, what packages to look out for, what to use and what to not use. So we talk about that. And I also have one called Frostcast, where I interview project leaders of free software projects, or also project leads of GNU Linux distributions. So I've interviewed recently someone from the FSFE, which is the Free Software Foundation in Europe. And I've interviewed quite many people on that. I have also interviewed the new Debian project leader recently, which that episode isn't out yet. So I do all sorts of things, but you know, I'd like to preface, I am no way an expert on any of these things. I'm just an opinionated person, know a little bit, and wanted to give some of my advice or what I know when you guys were discussing, you know, some of the open source stuff you were touching on last episode. You're like, oh, you know, well, how did companies do this? Or, you know, how do they get around this? And how is this successful and not? And so I just wanted to come on and kind of give some background to open source free software world and enlighten some of your listeners if they're curious about this topic.
Cool.
Well, you don't sound like you're very busy at all. I think you need to find a hobby.
I'm also married and have four kids, so.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I was home in my home office all day today, so I watched an episode of Dexter.
There you go.
So that's my accomplishment for the day.
So I don't know where you guys want to start, you know, that you're the topic of the of open source or whatnot. I mean, I can give a quick, you know, overhaul of kind of how everything got started. And if you guys have any questions or whatever, we can jump in. Or if you have any questions in general, you know, if you want to ask or whatever, I don't know how you want to go about doing it.
I'll have some questions, but you can go ahead and describe.
Sure. You know, I didn't want to come on and promote, you know, any of the, you know, stuff I'm doing. I just want to promote free software. So if that comes up, so be it. But so you know, first off, for me, you know, I'll have to preface this where I myself am what you call a free software advocate, and you'll know more of what that means by the end of this conversation, probably. So to start off, like, using the term open source, for me, I don't like using that term because it's kind of misleading and doesn't really describe exactly what's going on and how this whole movement was started. The open source terminology actually came about in the late 90s with Tim O'Reilly and Eric Raymond. They kind of started this term because they didn't like the idea of free, because they thought, And, you know, they're sort of right. The word free in the English language doesn't really give what this really is much justice. But so they wanted to come up with this term open source. And, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, it's sort of, you know, because they felt like free just meant like, oh, it's free, you can't make money, which isn't the case. So I don't like this term open source because it really doesn't describe what's, you know, what's going on here. So with that being said, you'll always hear me saying free software when, you know, to most people, I guess I mean open source. So now there's this man, Richard Stallman, and in the mid to early 80s, he was working at MIT and he's working in the media lab in the AI department, the artificial intelligence. And at this time, you know, there wasn't really a thing. Proprietary software kind of didn't exist at this point. It was actually probably in the late 70s, really, when it really started. And everyone in the lab would share their code. Like, you know, Unix was out. Everyone shared their code. This wasn't unheard of. Everyone did this. And one day, they had a problem with their printer, and Stallman wanted to be able to fix the printer driver so they could set the queues up to print stuff from the lab. And so one day he goes to his professor and he's like, hey, yeah, we need the driver for XYZ printer. And this is the first time he encountered this. The professor was like, I'm not going to give you that driver. And he was like, what? And he's like, well, what do you mean you're not going to give me the driver? And so this was the beginning of it all. And so this blew Richard Stallman away. He couldn't believe someone was not going to share the source code. Like, everyone shared source code. This isn't how the world works in his mind. And so he ended up leaving MIT, the media lab, and started this thing called the GNU Project. And what Stallman wanted to do was make a completely free, and free as in cost, yes, but free as in you can manipulate the source code, you can get the source code, you can get copies of the source code, you can distribute the source code, you can distribute modified versions of the source code. And that's what free means with free software. So Stallman said, you know what, I'm dedicating the rest of my life to this. So he started developing GNU. And so he started making an entire operating system with completely free software. And so he started this, and he started the Free Software Foundation in like 1985. The GNU just had their 30th birthday, actually, last weekend. So, you know, so he started all this work. And by like 1991 or 1990, Stallman had a complete operating system except for a kernel, and they're working on a kernel. It was called the Herd, and he had his ideas of how he wanted it to work. Well, anyways, in 1992, this young college student in Finland named Linus Torvalds published a thing on a website called the Linux Kernel. Actually, at the time, it might have been called I don't remember what he called it originally, but it was based off of Minix. Anyways, to make a long story short, the Linux Kernel was the last missing piece of the GNU project that Richard Stallman was doing. And the reason why he calls it free software is because you get four freedoms with free software. One, you can run the software however you want, even if it was never intended to do what you intended it to do. You can do whatever you wish with the software. That's the first freedom. The second freedom is you are able to read the source code and change it and modify it. So even if you can't read the source code and you don't understand what you're looking at, you still have that freedom to do it. You could pay someone $20 to do it, and then they could tell you what it's doing. The third is to freely distribute the source code. And then the fourth is to freely distribute modified versions of the source code. So if you don't have all four of these freedoms, you're not running free software, according to Richard Stallman. So this is where kind of open source and free software kind of collide, because there are companies that say, oh, you know, we're open source. Here, you have the whole core that's open source, but if you want to get the good pieces, what you're looking for to actually do anything useful, you need to pay us. And those parts are proprietary on top of the open source. So it's kind of called, some people reference it to it as open core. So that you know, so that's why I don't like the term open source, because it can really mean anything. That, you know, if you say free software, if you don't have the four freedoms, it's not free software. So,
well, I need to get this out.
Sure.
What's preventing someone from stealing this and marketing it themselves and trying to sell it?
Sure. Well, Richard Stallman started the GPL license, which is the GNU public license. In this license, it says that you have this source code, and I'm giving you the source code, but it's what they call a copyleft license. He he really took the copyright kind of thing and turned it on its head. So he said, here's source code. It's licensed under the GPL. This means if you have this source code and you make any changes, you must provide, if you distribute the source code, you must provide the changes from whoever you got it from. So it's not that you can't make money, but you can never take any GPL software and actually make it proprietary. It's impossible due to the license.
I mean, you don't have bad guys out there that can strip the code out or and try to sell it for themselves and
not
getting caught.
There's no indication of that happening. Actually, there was a company in Germany, I think, if I'm correct, a couple of years ago, actually, were distributing routers with GPL software, and they modified the source code on the Linux kernel running the routers, and they were actually sued over it, and they lost the case in court.
Who would have sued?
This was brought up to me before. I mean, that's why I wanted to bring it up to you that that people do steal some of this free software source code and try to sell it themselves. And sure. I don't know. I mean, that's why it was a question that was brought up to me because I don't program. I know nothing about programming. I don't know how that works.
Sure. So, would you say,
Tim? Who would have sued them? Who defends this?
It's really if you're using GPL software, there's pretty much. There are people making money off of it, but there are lawyers that are just out defending the GPL software. Like, there's another case of a lot of TV manufacturers actually, all these LCD TVs running, their little operating system based in the TV. Sure. All of those are running Linux. And a lot of them, with the GPL license, another requirement of the GPL license is you must make your source code available. So if you ship anything running GPL software, you must make the source code available either to download or to send a letter to a mailbox and have the source code shipped to you, you must make it available. And a lot of these TV manufacturers weren't doing it. So I don't remember, again, the company, but another company was basically brought to justice because they weren't making the source code available on the TV.
Yeah.
Interesting. So that's, that's how the GPL license is really... I don't want to say more concerned, but it's looking, the end goal is looking out for the end user. It's not concerned about, corporation A or even little developer in the corner. Its main goal is making sure that the end user, goals are in mind and the end user is thought of first at the end of the day. So that's really what the GPL software comes down to.
So legally you can charge for, I'm going to say free software.
Sure.
As long as you have, and you can manipulate it any way you want, as long as you have the code in there and you can sell it for what you want.
Correct. Red Hat makes $1 billion every quarter doing software, open.
That's a good example.
SUSE does the same thing. SUSE Enterprise does the exact same thing. They sell free software. I mean, they sell services on top of free software. I mean, they give away the software. I mean, the New York Stock Exchange and London Stock Exchange, all of those are running Red Hat Enterprise Linux. I mean, they're making money. They're making, a decent amount of money giving away free software.
Because if you Google, open source or free software, is it good or bad? I mean, you'll get pros and cons on both sides.
Absolutely.
It's all confusing. I mean, believe me, I like Freud.
Yeah. It's some people think it's more of a philosophical thing or whatever, but in my opinion, I mean, it does make a difference. Like I said, with if you say free software, you're going to have your four freedoms. If you say open source, I mean, it could mean anything. It's really up to the open source term has just made its way through, the industry and through the people at large. So it's just, everyone just says open source it.
Because I know these IT guys, and they'll say, they would never use anything, any open source or free software, and you just can't do it. It's not good. It's I'm just listening to what they're saying, but yeah. I don't know. That's why I wouldn't have you here.
Well, Google seems to think it works pretty well since everything they run is, free software. So, every Google server is running Linux. I mean, the majority of people within Google are running Linux. All the developers working on Android, working on the search engine, working on Gmail, working on whatever, the majority of them are running Linux.
And then do you think some of these enterprise companies or whatever, do you think that they feel threatened maybe because of the term or the name open source or free? It's going to hurt them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's really a whole nother way of thinking because, you know, look at what Red Hat's doing. I mean, they're giving away, you know, an entire operating system. They're giving away, you know, software where companies, you know, Fortune 500 companies are running their day-to-day business. They're giving it away. But instead,
but they're charging for support.
Exactly. So it's a whole nother way of making money. Yeah. Back in the 80s, it was, you know, Microsoft was king because they would sell their proprietary software on computers, and that's how you made the money. I mean, granted, they're going to make money too with like tech support and stuff, but I mean, the cash cow was selling the software. Same thing with like Office today. You know, they make tons of money selling Office licenses.
And these Microsoft fanboys, you know, they're bad mouthing or open or free software. But I'm reading articles where these big companies, they do back these open source projects like Intel. I just read an article about Intel the other day, and I think Microsoft, I heard them talk about something that they were backing up on Twit. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, they, Red Hat, Intel, Google, SUSE, there's a lot of people that contribute to the Linux kernel. Like, you know, don't be fooled by that at all. Like, I don't even know how many people have contributed in the past year, but there's a lot of companies that, you know, contribute to the Linux kernel. And they, you know, there's companies that pay developers to create software to give away for free to go into Linux kernel. You know, so that type of thinking isn't really, you know, popular throughout a lot of companies, but there are plenty of companies doing it. Granted, you know, they're obviously benefiting from the work, but, you know, they're paying developers to program stuff to give it away for free so everyone else can use it. There's things Intel that are doing to the kernel that Google's going to benefit from. Same thing with Red Hat. Red Hat's doing stuff to the kernel. Google's going to benefit from. Google's doing stuff to the kernel. You know, SUSE's going to benefit from. So.
Interesting.
Martin
and Tim, you have to ask some more questions. I used all mine up.
I'm just taking it all in. There's just, you know, you end up kind of latching onto a word, and that, you know, you brought it up earlier, Jonathan, about open source. Open source is has been the local catchphrase, like the cloud.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. You know,
but it doesn't. What does it mean? And that was great to hear. What does open source really mean? Well, it's an ambiguous word for a whole bunch of different things. But if you really want to get down to, now, when you say open source, do you mean open source A? Do you mean B? Do you mean C? Do you mean D?
Right.
What does open source mean? Like the cloud. Well, what do you mean by the cloud? And I have to ask clients because I do a lot of network and system administration. And, you know, they say, well, we want to do stuff in the cloud. Well, what is your end goal? And then we can talk about what the cloud really means to you. So kind of like that.
Yeah.
You know, we want open source. Well, tell me your end goal and we can decide what you want to do from there. And so it's great to hear the difference between, you know, that open source is just a catchphrase, but really what you mean is, you know, the GPL and that freedom.
Yeah. And kind of a good example is sort of Android. You know, everyone says, oh, Android's open source. It's awesome. It's great. And don't get me wrong. It is great. And I'm an Android user, but one of the things that Google does with the development of Android is, yes, it's open source, but what happens is they don't take any outside commits. So commits means if, like, say if I come up with a patch to make something better in Android, and I'm like, hey, here's, you know, I made the program XYZ run better, they're not going to take it. You know, only Google developers within Google work on Android. When, you know, KitKat comes out, what they do is they, you know, they do a code dump where they call it throwing it over the wall. So once Google's done and KitKat is finalized, they take it and just heave the source code over the wall and then say, there you go, do whatever you want with it, you know. And yeah, I guess that's open source, but it's not a real free software development environment. If it were like a real free software development environment, anyone could, you know, check into the GitHub account or whatever they're using and submit a patch, you know, into a testing branch, and then eventually it would get merged into, you know, Android. But that doesn't happen. Google doesn't do it that way. They work on everything internally. When they say it's finished, they heave it over the wall, and then from there they let anyone do whatever they want with it. But while it's being developed, they don't let anyone touch it.
Now, are there this may come across as a silly question for me, but are there other companies that will allow you to do that? That allow you to submit stuff to them, and so that way in the process of them coming up with their product, you can say, I know that I had a hand in that because I fixed, you know, such and such. Actually, sure. I had a friend who you did that with some Astaro stuff.
Yes. Yeah. The Linux kernel is a perfect example. Like right now I could, you know, install Git, you know, pull from Git the latest version of the kernel. You know, if I come up with an awesome patch or whatever, I can submit the patch right to the upsource, you know, the upstream of the Linux kernel. It would go into a testing branch. They would look it over. They would tell me, hey, you know, you need to fit, you know, you need to clean this up, or you should do it this way or that way. You should, you know, fix up your code a little bit. Well, I could resubmit the patch with it fixed. When it gets fixed, it would most likely get merged, and it could come on, you know, the next release of the Linux kernel.
Well, that's very cool, because you're not going to find that in some other major operating systems where you can definitely say that you have a hand on it.
Yeah.
I actually wasn't aware of that.
Of what?
That you actually could be involved in the development of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if it's a real free software development environment, that absolutely. You know, like that. Yeah. You know, that's what's, you know, that's why, again, I don't like the term open. It can mean anything. You know, the term open source. Like, you know, another example. Not that I'm harking on Google or anything. They're very good. People within the, you know, free software community. But you know, when Honeycomb came out, and everyone couldn't believe it. They were up in arms. Oh, they didn't release the source code. This is, you know, where kind of knowing about licenses can make a difference, because the Linux kernel is under the GPL. And if you distribute it, like I was saying, you must make the source code available. Google did make the Linux kernel of Android on that version available, but all of the stuff on top of the kernel, the user land stuff, everything, the things that you see and touch and drag and drop, that is under the Apache license. The Apache license says you don't have to release the source code if you don't want to, and Google didn't. And everyone thought, like, oh, they're being, you know, a bad player. They said they were open source, blah, blah, blah. They really weren't. They're doing everything they legally could do within the license. So even when KitKat comes out, Google could decide, we're not releasing the user land stuff. Here's the kernel. I mean, if they really wanted to, they could do that.
So that's two different things.
Yeah.
The user interface and the kernel.
Correct. Yeah, because the user interface is under the Apache license, and the Linux kernel is GPL. So,
right.
You know, and Google does a lot of stuff, too, in-house development on, you know, they run their own it's Ubuntu-based, but they call it Gubuntu, and they make a lot of changes to it, but since they're not distributing their work to the public, they don't have to release the changes they make. They can keep everything in-house.
Gotcha.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, I didn't think about that way either. That if you're just using it, you know, I mean, if I personally want to take it, change it, make it do something just for me, that's where it stops.
Correct.
If that's what I choose.
Correct.
Okay. But I never considered that aspect of it either.
Yes, but if you made it available for someone to download, or you distribute it in any way, shape, or form, that's when you have to, you know, put up your changes and submit your changes back to where, you know, it came, you know, where the original source code came from. So a lot of stuff can be done with free software. It's just trying to explain it to some companies is hard, because it's a totally different way of thinking. You know, I mean, I talk about this to not a lot of people, but if you hired some, like, you know, full-time personal developers for your company, and you worked on, say, like a Gubuntu within Google, or you worked on your own, you know, fill-in-the-blank type of program, instead of spending, you know, $10 million a year on licensing, you could pay this guy $250,000 a year, pay two guys $250,000 a year, maintain the software in-house. It can be quote-unquote open source or whatever, and you're going to have a way better, you know, potentially way better software running in your enterprise. And if those guys leave, who cares? The source code is free, so the next guy that comes in, you're going to hire, is going to know what he's doing, and he's going to be able to just step right in and take right over.
Wow.
That's another point you just brought up. Is free better than non-free?
Okay.
It depends on the software.
Okay, perfect lead into why I call myself a free software advocate. I do not use, well, other than, you know, using Hangouts right now, I choose not to use proprietary software as much as I possibly can. And the reason why I guess this might lead into why I started the ACF. The reason why I choose not to use proprietary software, if you use proprietary software, I'm not going to say you're evil, you're a bad person or whatever, But, you know, you can choose to run whatever you want, and I choose to run free software and advocate it. And this is why. Like I said earlier, I'm blind, and I used to use proprietary software 7-8 years ago. I was running Windows, and there's a screen reading software on there called JAWS. And there are a few other screen reading software that you can use within Windows, but generally you're gonna have to spend at least $1,000 to get this software just so I can use a computer. Now, 80% of blind people in the United States are unemployed, and it baffles me how these companies got to this, you know, price point. Let's see, if we do a little homework, we'll see that 80% of blind people unemployed. How in the world are they gonna afford $1,000? They don't even see that in a month living on a fixed income.
Right.
So what happens is, you know, government agencies, NGOs, some nonprofit organizations or whatever come in and foot the bill. So what's happening here is proprietary companies know that these other places will foot the bill. They come in, they charge an exorbitant amount, you know, a fee, in my opinion, and take advantage of people in the situations they're in. So this is why I don't use proprietary software, because really a lot of proprietary companies are doing the same thing, maybe on a different level, but you're still beholden to the creator of the proprietary software. If they tell you, guess what, we're not supporting version, you know, 2.x, time to upgrade. Or guess what? Oh, that functionality is broken. Oh, we need to buy this service pack to get that functionality working again. We decided to cut that out in the upgrade.
Never heard that before.
Yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Exactly. So that's why I'm not a fan of proprietary software. If you're using free software, you are in control of the software. You have control not only over the software you're using, but even your computer. So if you're using free software and they say, oh yeah, you know, that functionality you're using, we decided, yeah, it's not worth our time. Fine. Hire someone else and pick up the slack where it stopped. Like, if you have the source code, anything is possible. There's somebody out there willing to do something for a certain amount of money. And with free software, you have that power. You are in control of your own computing. And so that's why I started the ACF, because, you know, there's, like I said, a billion people out there with some type of disability. A large majority of them are not using a computer because they can't get this proprietary expensive software. And only very few people can get their hands on it because there's only enough money to go around. I mean, these companies making screen readers could charge 3 times as much tomorrow and they'll still get it. And that would just mean less people would be able to get the software.
Using it is totally free, right?
Yes, correct. And so
Windows wants to charge you upwards of $1,000 for what works on theirs.
Yeah, like if I were running Windows, I'd have to get, mm-hmm. you know, find an extra $1,000 just to use my computer.
It probably doesn't work as good as yours anyway.
Well, I mean, it's not perfect. I mean, you know, the sonar isn't perfect either, but I mean, you know, at least it's free as a cost, but it's also free as in software too, you know? So, you know, even at the $1,000, you're still going to have workarounds. Things still don't work. I mean, it's not perfect. So
how could somebody knock that? I just don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, and like I said, I think that's, you know, maybe because of where I'm coming from, that's why I'm more of a free software advocate, because I don't want to say it affects me more than people that don't need, you know, assistive technology, but I can see how people get taken advantage of and how, you know, who knows, like what person out there that currently can't use a computer, they might have the next best like web application. They might have the next best, you know, server application. They might have the next best idea for an operating system. Who knows what's locked up in someone that can't currently use a computer? And companies charging $1,000 or more just to use a computer are preventing that from happening.
Wow.
I don't want to say that seems criminal, because that seems like it's an over-exaggeration, but you got to be kidding me. I didn't know that. And so coming into this conversation, you're telling me these things, and I'm speechless that people will actually... I mean, I know that people take advantage of other people. I don't know. It just, I don't have any words for it.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot is made of the technology gap in folks who are geographically isolated, people who are economically isolated. You know, there's a big, big rush that we have to get computers and technology in their hands, whether they want it or not. But, you know, I don't see where this is any different. And, you know, if you if you don't have your eyesight, you're not going to use a computer as is. I can see where maybe the market is so small such that some enterprising company hasn't said, hey, there's a great market, let's go after it and be reasonable about it. I can't speak to that. Jonathan, you tell me what the market is. I can't imagine that Walmart's going to start stocking, $39.95 boxes right. of screen reader software tomorrow. Because if they could, they would. But the thing is that so much is made of all these other situations. But we have people right here. They can afford a computer. They can use it. They're missing that final link
right.
between them and them the GUI. And so, it's not criminal. I think it's just been overlooked. And so it's so fantastic that you have, that you're going forward with this, that you're getting this done. And I tell you what, just to take one step back, I'm amazed at what you can do. I have heard things that you have fixed, and I thought, I can see it. I don't think that I would have ever.
But you used to build.
This guy's amazing.
Jonathan used to build computers and sell them.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I used to. I ran my own computer shop from like 2002 to 2007.
Wow.
So
yeah, this guy runs folks. This guy runs laps around me with his eyes closed. Literally.
Well,
and
that's
real.
That's the thing, Tim. Though that's why I always point out there's a billion people in the world. That's underestimated. I've tried contacting Roku. And, just so you know, there's 360 million blind people in the world, 10 to 15 million in the United States alone. So, and granted, I'm not saying completely blind, it's like vision impaired. So the number is a rough number. It could be, some of these people might be blind without glasses and they put glasses on, they can see, but
sure.
their vision is deteriorating nonetheless. And so this group of people are underestimated and, and that's fine. And I will do everything I can with my nonprofit to get as much as I can, all those billion people to access some type of technology, whether it be a computer or a Raspberry Pi or a Beagle board or some type of Android device, whatever I'm going to do, my focus is to bring some type of assistive technology to any kind of gadget I can get my hands on. I've even reached out to Roku and I've emailed them a few times and surprisingly they haven't gotten back to me, but I've expressed to them, it's in your interest to make this thing accessible. I think you've only sold a few million Rokus. There's 10 to 15 million blind people in the United States. You really want to ignore this market?
How much more would it cost to put some kind of app on or device to help?
Yeah.
People who are vision impaired.
It would probably be
not a lot.
And I even offered to work with them to, do whatever I could to, help them with this effort. Like, I wasn't just like, hey, you should do this. I was like, this is who I am. I'm willing to help. Please let me know if you'd, like to work with me or, give me any kind of help so I could do it myself and implement it. What can I do? Because, the people that have disabilities are in a tight community. The minute they hear something's accessible, they tell everyone and then they all go out and buy that device.
I don't know if I've mentioned it on the show before, and I definitely know that I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this, Jonathan, but before I left and I started doing my business full time, I worked in education and loved it, had a great time there. One of the departments that I specifically worked for, I didn't work in Oregon. We don't have, we have school districts, but on top of that, we have what are called service districts. And service districts were originally created to help special needs students from birth to kindergarten, because after they're in public schools, then public school funding helps them move along from there. I was involved, but there were special departments within the ESD, Educational Service District, that were there. Speech pathology, blindness, that was held by another department, but I was involved a lot with the deaf and hard of hearing students and teachers. And you brought up the fact that when one person gets one thing, everybody goes and gets it. And they all had new phone came out while I was there, and one day somebody brought in the phone, and they were all crowding around this one person, and being in technology, because that's what I was there for, I did system network administration, but I was also assigned to this group. I was looking over their shoulder and I'm like, well, what are you doing? And they all stopped and I had to get an interpreter to help me translate. But they were looking at this new device. Mm. And the new device was it was a flip phone, but it was the newest one for texting.
Yeah.
For the deaf and hard of hearing. And within the week, they all had one.
Yeah.
Because so soon as something new comes out and it works great and it serves the need for what they want, it sells and it sells fast.
Yeah. Well, and kind of speaking on that too, it kind of brings back to the work I want to do with the ACF there. One of my friends, his sister-in-law is hard of hearing, and he was telling me she had this device. It was like a special sort of cell phone that was made for people that were hard of hearing. She had to get this grant. It was like, I might be wrong, it was like $4,000 to $5,000 to get this phone. And I was like,
no, you're not wrong. I asked them how much does that phone cost, and that was around the same price.
There's no reason you cannot use an Android phone and basically set up a service to do exactly what that thing was doing and make it free. Like, that's what my foundation wants to do. We'll put in the infrastructure, we'll get it set up, we'll foot the bill. There's no reason why someone hard of hearing needs to get a grant or a loan or whatever it is and pay $5,000 for it's probably a run-of-the-mill cell phone with a bunch of, you know, proprietary garbage on top of it that makes it do what it does. And then, again, they're taking advantage of people in the situations they're in. They know they're going to get $5,000 because if they want to use it, they're going to find a way to come up with the money, whether they get a grant or they find some nonprofit or some government agency to come in and pay for it. And all these companies know that, and they all play the same game.
Yeah, I completely agree. They were, you know, while they all did it, one of them broke, somebody broke their phone, and it was devastating.
Yeah.
Because you know, we break our phones, and we'll send it to Liam Tech, or we'll send it to Tim, and Tim will replace the screen,
right.
And he sends it right back to us, and, you know, we're out a couple $100.
Right.
It's like totaling your car.
You can't right. just, where I'm not walking around with an extra $5,000 in my pocket just in case I drop my phone.
Exactly. And again, too, like, kind of circling back around to free software, another great thing about, you know, the ACF and using free software for everything, you know, yes, it's free as in cost, but with free software, it also, I'm hoping we're going to have, sort of like lessons and things that we can give to where we're going to encourage, you know, software development. If there's a billion people in the world, we're going to have to get at least a million new software developers that have some type of disability that know how things need to run, know how things need to work. They're going to start developing this stuff themselves. And it's going to take, you know, take a life all onto its own once we can start moving forward with a lot of these things. And again, that's one of the freedoms you get with free software. You can see the source code, study it, learn how it works, understand why things do what they do by looking at the source code. And eventually you'll be able to enhance existing software or develop something that hasn't even existed yet. And who knows who's going to make the next fantastic piece of software.
Yeah, Tim just asked me a question, and this is an interesting point. He asked me, with the phone for the deaf and hard of hearing, what was different about it? And really, when I talked with them, it was...
You said texting. You said they were texting.
Oh, well, they texted, but what made the phone different is it did some different vibrations. Like, it acted differently.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And I think there's this... I think, I'm not, again, 100% sure, I think part of the, you know, $5,000 fee or whatever... I think there's sort of like a man-in-the-middle service. So, like, say if you, Martin, were speaking with someone that was hard of hearing with this phone, you would talk normally into the phone, but it would produce the text on the other end.
Right.
So it was still, like transcoding your voice, but, you know.
Or right, but is that, I mean, I bought a new Galaxy S4 before OLF, and I paid out of pocket a little over $500. Is that really worth 10 times as much? I mean, I'm not trying to put a value on saying that that's not worth 10 times as much, because you can't really put a value on incorporating somebody with a disability into, you know, into that. But what I want to say is that they're getting ripped off.
Yeah, well, totally. And I mean, again, it's, you know, the numbers are underestimated. People don't think there's that many people out there that have some type of, you know, disability or some type of need. I mean, really, we have SpaceX, we have, Mars rovers, we have all this other stuff. And we can't make something that's been around since the 70s accessible to people still?
Yeah.
We can.
Well, right.
Well, we can. You just got to make sure that you have enough money to be a part of it.
Right. It, you know, and again, so that's the goal of my nonprofit. You know, if you go to the acf.co, like, that's our whole goal, is to bridge the gap between accessibility and technology. There's no reason why, you know, anyone with any type of disability can't use some type of off the shelf, you know, gadget. There's no reason for it.
So the acf.co is your parent company, right?
Yeah.
And then you're creating a product called Sonar.
Correct.
That's in that. Now, what is Sonar then?
Sonar is a GNU Linux operating system where it's like, I think Mitch mentioned at the beginning, it's focused on people on assistive technology, people with disabilities. So what happens is when you download Sonar, it has a screen reader built into it. So if you're a blind individual, you can download Sonar, burn it onto a disk, and boot off of it. Now, when you boot off of it, it's going to go into a live session, and the Orca screen reader is going to come up talking. This means that a blind person can, on their own, with no sighted help at all, download it, burn it, install the operating system themselves with no sighted help at all, reboot, and use their computer. Now, included on Sonar is magnification software for people with low vision. If you were to purchase magnification software on other proprietary systems, it's at least $800. So there's already magnification software on Sonar. I include a font for people with dyslexia. I include a couple of on-screen keyboards for people. Wow. For people with low motor skills. There's a couple of different on-screen keyboards. There's a really basic generic one, but there's also another one that will do like predictive text, and you can even program it to pre-populate certain things. So if you're saying things over and over, you know, certain paragraphs or name and address or whatever, you could type it in once and save it to hit a certain button, and that whole thing will just pre-populate. So you can cut down, you know, on your time doing repetitious things. There's also software on there to do head/eye tracking. So a quadriplegic can take any webcam, as long as it loads in Linux, the driver loads in Linux, they can use any webcam, and just by moving their head or even moving their eyeball, you can move the cursor on the screen. And then,
wow.
And then what happens is when you stop, you can program it to do certain things. So when you stop moving, you can say, okay, after 3 seconds or 5 seconds of movement, if there's no movement, I want you to click on whatever the cursor's on. So they would move over to whatever they want to click on, and then you can open up Firefox and then start surfing the web that way. And so with that, and the combination of an on-screen keyboard, you know, a quadriplegic could really do anything they want, as long as, you know, granted, I'd imagine you have to be a little patient to do it. But, you know, if you've never used a computer before, you're going to do whatever you can to use it, if it's your, you know, if it interests you. So we're also working on right now. I don't know if it'll be ready or not. I'm really pushing for it. It works, but it's not user-friendly at all. We're working on a program. It's called Blather, and it's basically replaces Dragon Naturally Speaking. Now, we already have a user that has been dual booting Windows and Linux, and the only time he would boot into Windows is to use Dragon. He's a professor in Louisiana, a college professor, and Blather's working well enough to where he's already deleted his Windows partition and no longer uses it, and uses Blather. So if it's good enough for him to totally dump Windows and not use Dragon anymore, it's at a pretty decent state right now. But it's, like I said, it's not totally user-friendly yet. Like, we can get a lot of basic things running, but if you wanted to add functionality to it, it's not easy yet to do that. You need to kind of know bash scripting and a few other things. So it's not totally user-friendly, but if your usage But if your usage falls within the basic stuff, you could totally use this right out of the box, no problems. So we're working on that too. So all of these things are included in Sonar. We are totally focused on making, you know, this operating system accessible to anyone that has any type of disability. We're trying to meet their needs however we can. And so really my goal personally, and as the executive director at the ACF, is to have everyone that depends on assistive technology using Sonar. There's no reason to go to these, you know, even when I switched over to using free software, I was a freshman in college. And I could still get free copies of JAWS and stuff because I was going to school. I ran my own business. At that point in time, I decided myself to just stop using it totally. I dumped Windows and I used free software just to make that stand so I could walk the walk and talk the talk. And so I stopped using, you know, the proprietary stuff 7 years ago, six, 7 years ago. And my goal is for, you know, people that have disabilities not to even give these companies a chance anymore to take advantage of them. Just switch over to free software, you know, gain control of your computer and the software you depend on to access the computer. And granted, it's free. That's a great benefit. But let's get all these people involved. Let's turn them into developers. Let's turn them into, you know, people squashing bugs. Let's turn them into people helping out on mailing lists. Or, you know, not only will Sonar bring accessible freedom to people, but Sonar really will be well for people that even might have a little entrepreneurship in them. There's people in India that could take Sonar and localize it for the region they live in. They could become, you know, Sonar tech support people within their, you know, town or city. Same thing across the world. People, there could be little, you know, startups that pop up supporting Sonar within their region, within their country. And or if they become developers, they could start developing stuff specifically for their region or whatever. I mean, this really, the sky's the limit. I'm not saying, you know, it's up to these people once they get Sonar in the hands if they want to become entrepreneurs and start their own jobs. But, you know, not only will it bring them, you know, bridge the gap between accessibility and technology, but I'm hoping it'll even create jobs for a lot of these people, because a lot of them are jobless right now anyways. So,
you know, and that was actually the thing that I really took from this, was that there's a large group of people out there that could be using computers. They could be producing things. They could be creating new ideas. And it seems to me like this whole project, it just needs a spark that once it gets rolling, the community that is created by it will then pick it up and take it where it needs to go.
Yeah.
Did I say that well?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, yeah, it would definitely have a life of its own at that, you know, once that spark does ignite it, I mean, there'd be no stopping it really. I mean, in which I would love to see it, but until then I just keep trudging forward and keep promoting, you know, free software, keep promoting assistive technology and, you know, bring awareness to, you know, there are this many people out there that have some type of disability. It's just, you know, they're underestimated and, you know, kind of written off, you know?
I've heard other people talk about Sonar before and what it does. But I've never heard you explain it, and hearing it straight from you, just, it gives me the chills. Like, you are a man among men, that you took this project and you said, this is what we need to do. And you're not just saying, I need to do it for people who are visually impaired, but you're covering, Tim said, wow, in the middle of your talk about the quadriplegic and the eye and the, you know, stopping with the eye movement. I don't know about the rest of my hosts here, but Sonar sounds revolutionary. And I am just, you know, I'm excited to see where it's going to go. And I want that spark to happen, because this is really exciting, and it's, I'm all revved up for you.
No, thanks. Yeah. It's quietly, you know, picking up steam. You know, it's been downloaded in over 30 countries already. So there are, you know, people using it. The mailing list is pretty busy. So it's, you know, things are picking up, and, you know, I just need to keep moving forward and keep bringing awareness to it. There are a couple of, companies highly interested in the work that I'm doing. So they're, hopefully going to be, you know, supporting me monetarily sometime soon, which would be nice. You know, so nothing but good can come out of this. And I'm just really excited about, you know, and again, that's what's great about, you know, the free software community. Anyone can stand up and do what I'm doing. You know, Mitch could stand up and be like, you know what, I'm going to start developing this, or I want to get involved with this community. And even if you're not a developer, you can start making a difference. I mean, I wouldn't call myself a developer, but I mean, maybe some people would. But even before I started quote unquote development, I got involved with some communities and pointed out to them, oh, hey, I'm a blind user. I'm having a problem with XYZ. You know, it'd be great if you could fix it to do this. I don't really know what needs to be done, but if, you know, I could have it do this, you know, this is what's happening when I'm using it. And I've had tremendous results by doing that, reaching out to people and literally developers being like, you know what? I never considered someone being blind using my software. I'm going to fix it tonight. You know, the next month when the new release comes out, it'll be in there. And I would check the next month when the new release is out. Sure enough, it's in there and it's working. So you can make differences like that with free software. You don't have to be a developer. You can just reach out and test things and bring awareness to certain things. I mean, there's so many things you can do with free software. The sky's the limit. And motivation, I guess.
It certainly is.
The, you know, well, actually, and just to address what Martin said, you know, when I, I was like, wow, I kind of put something together. I love seeing technology. I love seeing people take technology and then make it do something that is new. Mm. You know, existing technologies. And I've told a couple stories on here where people that I know that they aren't like super techy, but they get around okay. And they have solved problems. They're like, I want this to do this. And then in the end, it's doing, they've solved it through a series of steps. And I'm like, gosh, how on earth did you do that? And they're like, well, I have to do that, you know, A to B, B to C, C to D, where if somebody had come to me and said, I have A and I need to get to D, it would have blown my mind. But, you know, it's like they've just taken stuff off the shelf. They've figured it out and they make it work. And so I love stories like that. And so especially in what you said, you know, somebody who's quadriplegic to just take something and say, here, and within 5 minutes, they can use it. Mm. And I mean, it sounds like Star Trek. You know, five, 10 years ago, this would have sounded, it would have sounded like really, like, okay, well, good luck with that.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing is that, and why I said wow, is that we're seeing commercials on TV of some doofus who looks away from his camera and the video stops. And then he looks back, it starts again. And so, and you see that, and it's like, okay, you know, it's just your typical doofus. But that exact same technology that is just that they're using to sell these phones, it's not mind blowing. It doesn't amaze you anymore. Mm. It's all very commonplace. And to hear something as simple as that that's being used in comparatively a very trivial thing, it's like, you know, well, I'm too lazy to hit pause. I'm just going to look away.
Right.
And stop. You know, it is allowing somebody who, you know, through some unfortunate circumstance, has completely lost all use of their limbs to actually like get connected the way the rest of us.
Hey, yeah.
It gives me chill. I'm like, the hair standing up on my arms just talking about this. I think it's just fantastic. I love technology. I love seeing people do things with it. And so, once this ball gets rolling, I can't imagine where this could possibly go, what people will do, and what we'll see, the innovation.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, technology is fantastic, and there's really no reason why these things shouldn't even be done by now, you know, but again, that's why I'm kind of standing up and fighting the fight, because there's really no reason for these things not already existing. And so that's why, you know, I'm doing this and, you know, making the stand for all these people. And, you know, I don't know if I'm sounding whatever, but, you know, that's really my drive, is to just, you know, I myself have experienced what I'm able to do with technology when it's in my hand. Like, I wouldn't have done 90% of what I've done in my life if it wasn't for accessibility and assistive technology. I wouldn't have graduated college. I wouldn't have graduated high school. And how many more, you know, I'm looking at possibly starting an Indiegogo campaign soon for the vision impaired people in Nepal, because Nepal is like really, there's like zero technology there, and there's 200,000 blind people in Nepal or vision impaired, and about 200,000 of them are current, not 200,000, 40,000 of them are in school. About 80 or 90 of them graduate every year. Once they graduate high school, there's no chance at college, because they're literally still like printing Braille books on demand and stuff. Yeah. Like, they're just so far behind. And I'm just like, what would happen? You know, my Indiegogo campaign is focused on making the Raspberry Pi accessible. What would happen if I could bring an insane amount of Raspberry Pis to Nepal, set up the universities with them, set up there's a national Nepal Association for the Blind. They have a bunch of branches. What would happen if I could set up all these with accessible Raspberry Pis? What could these vision impaired people do now that they had technology? They could take classes at college. They could surf the internet and, you know, do research. They could, who knows what the possibilities are endless. They could start taking classes online. I mean, the sky would be the limit. And a lot of these people in Nepal, their government is set up much different than over here in the United States. If they don't get a job, you know, there's no support. Like, they basically, yeah, you know, become like, I don't want to say burden, but they come dependent on their family or their community, because they, you know, there's no infrastructure there set up for any kind of funding. So, you know, a large majority of them don't graduate college and then don't get jobs. So, and technology, I feel, is stopping a lot of them from succeeding in life, you know, succeeding at some of these things. So, sure, you know, so that's my goal, you know, with the ACF, is to just give these people a chance. Like, I can't make them succeed, but I want to at least give them all the fighting chance that they deserve to access technology and make some type of difference in their life in some way, shape, or form.
Well, yeah. It's just giving people opportunity. What they do with it is up to them.
Exactly, yeah. You can lead the horse to water, but you can't make him drink, right?
Yeah.
Jonathan, I'm sure Mad Doll John Hall is one of your favorite people. You sound a lot like him.
Thanks. Yeah, I actually I don't want to say I talked to him quite a bit, but he's encouraged me quite a bit on many occasions, and he's a great friend. I can tell you.
Texan calls us. Yeah, we all met him when we were out there.
Yeah,
very, very, very good man.
Yeah, he's awesome. So, I don't know if I got to cover like free software actually. And I didn't think I was going to talk about stuff that I'm doing as much as I did, but. Sorry for that, folks, if you wanted to actually learn something useful.
You're very inspiring.
This was your chance. I mean, we're booked like for years.
Oh, okay. So,
we are? I mean, yes.
Yeah. But that's right. All the hats are sold, t-shirts gone, forget
it. Well, is there any, I know you guys kind of brought up other things that I can't remember right now, but is there any, you know, other sort of questions around, you know, open source and businesses or licensing or anything else that I could answer and get off my soapbox?
Well, let's put it this way. How can people help you? How can they get a hold of you if they want to contribute? Or
if any of this interests you at all, Martin is a member of the ACF, and you can become a member if you visit the ACF.co, or you can visit Accessible Computing Foundation, because currently, right now, at this time, as we're recording, the ACF.co is down, and I hope after this is over, it'll be up, and it's all my fault why it's not up right now, but that's another story for another time. But so you can visit accessiblecomputingfoundation.org or the ACF.co, within a few hours. If you go there, you can make a one-time donation, you can become a member like Martin. At $2 a month, you can become a member, or 10, or 20, or even 50, whatever you want to do. However you want to support us, it's greatly appreciated. You know, you might think $2 isn't much, but, you know, if you get a number of people donating the $2, it can make a difference. And, you know, so every bit helps and counts. I don't pay myself at all right now, because, you know, I feel like it would be wrong to really take any of the money the ACF is making, because it's not, you know, it's basically kind of just treading water right now, staying above water and paying its bills. So I don't take any money from this, so if you're worried about that, don't worry, I'm not paying myself. You'd just be supporting, you know, the effort into, trying to do the work that I'm doing. If the money is there and there's a conference, I will take that to help me get to a conference to give a talk. But outside of that, I'm not actually, like, paying myself, so that's what's going on with that. So if you want to help out, it's greatly appreciated. Even if you don't have money and you want to, maybe you're a good writer, or you're good at graphics, or you have any type of idea, I'm willing to listen to anything. There's lots of people that have given me suggestions, you know, within the last year. I'm, you know, trying to implement them as best as I can, but I'm only one person. I can only do so much. I'm, you know, working on Sonar. I'm also working on developing Android ROMs that are kind of like Sonar based. I'm calling them Sonar Mod. And those Android ROMs are focused on, again, all types of assistive technology. So I'm working on things like that. And I just do take whatever chance I can to promote, you know, free software and assistive technology. So however you want to help it, I'll take anything you got. So, it's all greatly appreciated. Anyone that does, help out any way, shape or form.
Well, I know that I'm going to, I've definitely been inspired, and I know that I'm going to up my per month cost to you, or my per month giving to you, after this talk. You've definitely have inspired me. And if people, you mentioned if people don't have money, they can write, they can call you, things like that. How can we get Sonar out more? How can we be part of that?
I guess, there's probably a good chance, you know someone who knows someone that might have some type of disability, and, just say, hey, I heard about this thing, maybe you can ask them what their current situation is with assistive technology, or, and that's the great thing about Sonar too, since it's based off Linux. I mean, Sonar will run on, I'm running it on computers that are 5, 6, 7 years old. So There are the computers out there people are discarding, and there might be blind people that don't even have a computer. Take Sonar, take the discarded computer, bada bing, bada boom. Now this blind person has a computer, and start using a computer, possibly, get the internet, start, reaching out to people on, social network, whatever it is. I mean, really, the sky's the limit. I don't really have a set plan to necessarily get Sonar out to the masses yet, because it's looking like it's going to be sort of a ground-up type of thing than a top-down, because the top doesn't want to see Sonar come to pass. So it's going to have to come from the bottom.
Right. Can we download it and seed it on
Absolutely.
A torrent for you?
Or? Yeah, you can do that too. If you go to sonar-project.org, you'll see the Sonar there. There's all types of versions of Sonar you can download. The torrents are there. So if you want to see the torrent, that helps out too. Whatever people can think of to help out, I definitely don't have all the answers. So I need, help from all angles. So.
Very cool. Very cool. So what, do you have anything then on the horizon of new stuff that's coming out for Sonar that's going to be included in there? You briefly, I don't know if it was at the beginning of the show or before the show started, you talked about currently Sonar is based on Ubuntu.
Yes.
But you're going to be maybe looking over it, moving it more to an Arch-based distro.
Yes. Currently, Ubuntu is great, and they serve their purpose. Ubuntu has different goals in mind, and which is totally understandable, and they can totally do that. But building the current Sonar, I'm having a lot of problems because Ubuntu's mix and matching a lot of packages. They have an older version of this, a newer version of that, a middle version of this, and it's just all over the place, and it's not making Sonar a great experience. So we're looking at switching over to Arch Linux, and if you're not aware of what Arch Linux is, basically it means you get all of the latest software right away, it's not held back, and you'll always have the latest and greatest. So we're looking at moving Sonar over to that for a number of reasons. A, because, what I just said, you get all the latest stuff. B, we'll have way more control over it and be able to add packages into Arch Linux way faster than we could in Ubuntu. If there was something in Ubuntu we didn't need that we needed, we'd have to, it'd be hard to get into, but not impossible, but hard. With Arch Linux, we've had a few packages already in that we've had to submit, and we've had them in there the next day. So it's just quick, and we'll have way more control over it. So we're looking at doing that. We're looking at getting Blather up and running, the Dragon Naturally Speaking thing. We're also looking at, right now, Orca, the screen reader, has a very, robotic voice. I'm hoping, I was told by October, so technically today, we should have a better voice synthesizer that works with Sonar that has a much more realistic sounding voice. So that's another thing that I'm hoping to have out in the next release of Sonar also.
Wow. That is, definitely inspiring. Definitely, for me.
And don't get me wrong, it's not me doing all this. I don't want to take any credit for things I'm not doing.
Well, that does bring up a question I wanted to ask you earlier, is are you doing this all yourself, or do you have a team of people that are helping you either locally, nationally, or even worldwide?
Not worldwide yet, but not locally either. Throughout the country, there's one individual doing Blather, another individual is doing the better voice for Sonar. Me and another individual are working on porting Sonar over to Arch Linux. So there's two of us doing that. Before that, it was me just doing Sonar, based off of Ubuntu. But I do have some help now moving it over to Arch, which is fantastic. So there is help. I'm not just doing everything by myself. That's for sure.
No, well, give those people high fives.
Definitely.
I'm with Fred in the chat room. He says, great guess. I'm inspired as well. I'm not going to throw my computer out the window and will keep trying to learn Linux.
Nice. Hey, if a blind guy can, you can.
It's just amazing. I mean, it's like you've taken on this big monstrous thing, and I'm sitting here crying because Google Hangouts Toolbox changed.
Yeah, I mean, what is that? First perspective. Is that a first world problem? Is that what that is? First world problem?
Yeah. It's like, we all need a jolt back to reality every once in a while. And exactly. That, everybody has problems, and that very, very often one's own are quite small, which all of mine are. And so I'm with Freddie. We'll keep plugging away, and I'm going to try and do bigger, better things. I really do appreciate the work you're doing, and just what you're taking on, and nothing bad. It's just like I can't even stop to think of all the things, all the wonderful, fantastic things that come of this, and all the people to be affected, all the people you've touched, and it's pretty fantastic.
And really, this all circles back around to how this whole discussion started, was Richard Stallman, you know, in the early 80s, developing free software. His goal was to make a free software operating system, and if it wasn't for that work, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. So it all comes back to Stallman realizing, like, this is going to be a problem in the future. The minute he saw a proprietary printer driver, he knew it was going to be a problem, and that's why he focused his whole life on doing this.
He should have used the HP LaserJet 4. That's all.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's the only thing a printer driver ever solved.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The only good that ever came from a printer driver.
Yeah, so, you know, and also, the, you know, if someone, people look up Richard Stallman, RMS, I agree 100% with his views on free software. I do not agree with anything outside of that. just so I'm clear on that, in case people think whatever. 100% free software, yes. Anything outside of that, no.
you don't have an RMS for 2016 bumper sticker?
No.
Oh man, now I'm really curious.
Huh? Yeah, you'll find interesting stuff. But I met him a handful of times. I interned at the Free Software Foundation a few years ago. Really nice guy, super nice guy. I mean, you know, a lot of people have kind of, you know, maybe not the right idea of kind of who he is or whatever, but super nice guy. And like I said, if it wasn't for him doing this work over 30 years ago, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing right now. So
that's very cool. So just the kind of on the ending of our show as we close up here, you put on the Northeast Linux Fest.
Yes.
And when is that? And what is it?
Besides the Linux Fest. I started the Northeast GNU Linux Fest when I was a freshman in college, because the first computer science class I took, I was the only person running free software. Everyone was running Windows, and there was one Mac user. And I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, we're all computer science students. What do we, you know, you got to be using Linux if you're going to develop. So, you know, long story short, by the end of the semester, I had all of them running Linux. Even the Mac user was running Linux on his Mac. And I realized at that
point. Was his name Steve C?
No.
I'm just curious.
This guy actually can do anything.
I know.
But so I realized.
Cats and dogs living together, Mac people running Linux.
It'll be chaos. But so I realized, I was like, you know what? If my computer science class here was this way, it's got, you know, the majority of them are probably like this, you know, in the East Coast or in Massachusetts or whatever. So I was like, I'm going to start a conference and, you know, bring awareness to, you know, what Linux actually can do, what free software can do. And so I started the Northeast GNU Linux Fest my freshman year to bring awareness to college students. Like, hey, you know, businesses use this stuff. You know, people use this in their homes to do various tasks. You know, students use this stuff on a day-to-day basis. This is a viable solution. And, you know, people have their, you know, notions of what they think Linux is or whatever. And so that's why I started the Northeast GNU Linux Fest, is to bring awareness of free software, what it can, how it can change your business, your life, your schooling, you know, how to use it for your homes, whatever, you know, to just, again, bring awareness to it. And what was I going to say? I lost my train of thought. Shoot. Oh, well.
Don't worry. That's a normal thing that happens here.
So that's why I started, you know, to just, you know, bring awareness to it, so people would realize that, you know, oh, that's what I was going to say. When I probably my second or third year in school, in college, I was running, you know, I was telling people, because at that time I was running a website called Frostbite Systems, and I was selling computers that came pre-installed with Linux. I was selling desktops and laptops. And I was in an entrepreneur class, and so they pulled my website up on the projector, and they're like, whoa, man, oh, you built that website, and you're selling these computers? And one kid was behind me, he's like, oh, man, you run Linux? Isn't that like, hacker, like, command line kind of thing? And I was like, dude, no. And I turned on my computer, and I was like, this is what Linux looks like. And he's like, whoa. He's like, that looks just like a regular operating system. I was like, exactly. And, I couldn't, like, a lot of people out there still think Linux is that command line thing, and you can't use it unless you're some uber nerdy geek, you know, and it's really not the case. I mean, if you don't want to see the command line this day and age, you never have to see it.
Shh. Let's not give it away.
Okay. Yeah,
I installed
unless you're running Arch.
For the first time Sunday, Saturday. Ugh.
Yeah, yeah. It can be painful.
It worked, but not right, but it worked.
So, yeah, so yeah, that's the Northeast Gnu Linux Fest.
Wow. And that's coming up in March, right?
I'm not 100%, but I think it's going to be April 5th of 2014. And I believe we were looking at MIT, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen. So it'll probably be back at Harvard again, the next event.
All right. I would love to make it over there again or for the first time, but we'll have to see what happens.
Coming
from the West Coast.
Cody's coming. So
yeah, but he skipped out on all
of that. Yeah. He can't be trusted.
Yeah, he's got money now. Some of us actually held to our commitments.
I hear you.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to speak for the rest of the guys, but I will anyways. But it's been a pleasure, absolute pleasure to have you on tonight. And I know that we brought you on about open source software, but you got a chance to talk about you and what you do and your passions and what makes you just excited. And it's inspiring for all of us.
No, thank you so much. I appreciate you guys giving me your time and putting off the show for half an hour just so I can make it. And, hopefully someone did learn something about, free software, I guess, just for me talking about what I'm doing with it. And I guess that's just an example of the things you can do. Like I said, a few minutes ago, if it wasn't for free software, I wouldn't be able to do any of this stuff. And it's because of free software I can do this stuff. So.
Wow. That's a great way to end the show. I don't know. I'm speechless. But people can find you. People can find you at the accessiblecomputingfoundation.org.
Yep.
ACF.co when it comes back up. Looks like somebody forgot to pay the domain name.
No. And also, if you're going, you can go to northeastlinuxfest.org. You can find me there. I'm on Google+. Not that I can really use it. I'm on Twitter. Not that I use that. You can find me though. If you just Google my name, you'll find me. I'm somewhere.
The Google+, I can't use it either, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, Tim, but you got nothing to complain about, though.
Sorry. It changes day to day. As soon as you figure out they change, it's a game.
Well,
it's
a shell game. I recently got Chrome, the Chromium browser, which is the free software version of Chrome. I recently got that actually accessible. It's things like this that are kind of boggling. Like, Google makes Chrome, and they make this plugin called ChromeVox, which is cool. It's basically a screen reader in the browser, so the screen reader on my computer turns off and the screen reader in the browser turns on. So really the reason why they made it was for the Chromebooks. But so, they have this extension. You can install it on Chrome and use it. If you're blind and the Chrome web browser is inaccessible without this plugin, how does a blind person get it installed without any help? Like, you think they would have thought of that before they pushed it out, But with Chromium, there's now a way someone, thankfully, in the blind community, made a way to basically wget the plugin into the folder you need it in. So that way, when you start Chromium, boom, the screen reader turns on right away and you can use it. So, with that being said, I'll be playing with that in the next month or two and seeing how well that works.
That's the sort of thing that people with eyesight do.
Yeah.
And it has to actually be tested by people. It's like, I'm guessing it was probably something like that.
Yeah. Last time I was in Boston, my buddy was like, "Hey, let's go out and get something." Okay, we go to an ATM, touch screen. I'm like, "How am I?" I was like, "Really?"
You're right. You're exactly right. All the new ones do it.
I was like, "Really?"
Rent a Redbox movie.
I had my wife do it, But I never encountered a touchscreen one before. I was like, and again, I was like, "Really? You can't make this thing talk?" Like, it would probably cost, an extra $20 to get, a synthesizer in the thing and have it talk, but that's too easy, So it's just things like that, again, that the ACF wants to, help. Not that I think we can change the banking industry, but, it's just little things like that we want to bring awareness to,
Interesting.
Wow. Well, we talked about ways you can get a hold of Jonathan there. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can email us at geeksters@podnuts.com. If you want to send us a voicemail, 707-6-PODNUT. You find us podnuts.com/geeksters. Look forward to having you guys join us again next week. We'll have some emails. We got some emails last time. We'll read them next week and we're going to see everybody next week. And I hope everybody has a great week. Talk to you later. Bye bye.
See you guys later. Thanks for having me on.